While the domestic crises were unfolding, the signals from the Middle East this morning are genuinely alarming. Saudi Arabia has issued warnings about what it describes as imminent coordinated attacks by Iran-backed groups. The Saudis have not specified the groups by name in public statements, but the framing, coordinated and imminent, suggests intelligence pointing to a multi-vector threat, potentially involving Houthi forces in Yemen, Hezbollah or affiliated groups, and possibly Iraqi militias. The Saudis have been targeted before, most memorably with the Abqaiq oil facility attacks in 2019, but the word coordinated in a public warning suggests something more complex than a single missile or drone strike.
And the timing of this Saudi warning lands alongside what is probably the most direct statement Iran's Revolutionary Guard has made about its nuclear program in years. The IRGC chief's public statement that Iran will keep building nuclear weapons is not diplomatic language. It's not ambiguous. You don't get statements like that from a military commander unless the political decision has already been made that direct assertion serves a strategic purpose, whether that purpose is deterrence, domestic signaling, or a negotiating posture ahead of talks. The effect is the same. It dramatically complicates any diplomatic pathway and puts the Gulf states on elevated alert simultaneously.
The Iran nuclear declaration and the Saudi warning arriving on the same day is not coincidental in my read. Iran has been methodically advancing its enrichment program over the past 2 years, and there's a coherent strategic logic to making a public declaration while simultaneously having proxy forces in position. It compresses the decision space for adversaries. It says, the threshold question is already settled, so your options are narrower than you think.
On Ukraine, the picture this week involves two moves that are essentially mirror images of each other. Zelensky has ordered his government to prepare what he's calling a special sanctions operation targeting specific Russian companies fueling the arms industry. This is economic warfare by name, not just defensive action. At the same time, Trump told reporters this week, in what is now a widely quoted line, "We want missiles too," dismissing Zelensky's appeal for additional Patriot interceptors by citing depleted U.S. stockpiles. The bluntness of that dismissal, not a diplomatic deflection, but a competitive framing, as if the U.S. and Ukraine were bidding for the same inventory, was notable.
The Patriot situation matters enormously on the ground because of what Russia is doing with its drone technology. Russia's fiber-optic guided drones are now overcoming Ukraine's electronic jamming in ways that GPS-guided or radio-controlled systems cannot. A fiber-optic drone is physically tethered to its operator by a hair-thin optical cable, which means jamming the radio frequency environment does nothing. You cannot jam light. Ukraine has been relying heavily on electronic warfare as a force multiplier, and the shift to fiber-optic guidance is a direct counter to that entire doctrine. It's the kind of technological adaptation that forces a complete reconsideration of how you defend airspace over a front line.
And Zelensky's response to the Patriot denial and the drone escalation is to go after the supply chain directly. The sanctions operation he's ordered would target Russian companies, arms manufacturers, component suppliers, logistics firms that Western sanctions have so far failed to fully cut off. Ukraine's calculation seems to be, if we can't get more interceptors, we can try to degrade Russia's capacity to produce the missiles those interceptors would intercept. It's a second-order strategy, and it reflects the reality that Ukraine is having to be more creative with far fewer resources.
Senator Duckworth's legislation is also relevant here. She's introduced a bill that would force the Pentagon to maintain a single cumulative casualty count for Iran-related hostilities, covering the 18 American service members killed and at least 689 wounded since February. The Defense Department has apparently been splitting the count, which critics say obscures the true scope of U.S. casualties in the region, whether that's bureaucratic compartmentalization or deliberate political management. The number, 689 wounded, is not one that's been prominently featured in public coverage, and Duckworth is trying to make sure it can't be quietly disaggregated.